All right, welcome to the 9 till noon show. Unfortunately, my sting's gone. It's not there, so I'm just going to have to do it old school. It is the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. It's approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 7th of November, and we've got a really busy show for you. Seamus Gunn is in answering your legal questions just after 10 o'clock, so if you have any questions relating to legal matters or anything in that space whatsoever, then give us a call or a text right now, and I'll give you the number after I also invite you to get involved in the conversation with our Friday panel. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. You can give us a call on 074 91 25,000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. Who is with us on the Friday panel? Well, we can say good morning first to Mary Coyle, manager of Enid Niamh Padraig. Good morning to you, Mary. Lovely to see you.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning to you as well. A lovely morning here in Gweedore.
Excellent stuff. It's not too bad here in our part of the county today. Mary Hart, journalist and broadcaster. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning, Mary. Yes, beautiful.
What's the Riffle weather update like? Is it
lovely? Lovely out. I'm looking out the lovely autumn leaves.
Excellent. Okay.
No wind.
Not yet, anyway. John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper. You're in a cave, so you probably don't know what the weather's like yet, do you?
I've just been out walking the dog, so I have a fair idea. It's a lovely, it's a pleasant morning. It's dull, it's overcast, end of weather forecast, probably gales tomorrow.
Yes, but listen, aren't we all here to be able to talk about it, which is the most significant thing for me. Listen, thanks, guys, for joining us. Just a few, well, we've got quite a lot to get through. We'll see where we go from here. Interested, though, in your views, given the makeup of this panel as well. Does the revelation that a prominent political broadcaster in Ivan Yates with a former Fine Gael background, the fact he provided paid campaign training to a rival party, a.k.a. Fianna Fáil, and their presidential candidate and other TDs and the party leader. Is there any potential for this to erode public trust in the objectivity of current affairs commentary? John McAteer, I'll start with you.
Everybody's been very cagey about this at the moment because Ivan Yates is the biggest name in Irish political punditry. You know, over the last 25 years, he has made a huge career out of it. He's probably the most sought-after speaker in the whole country for motivational evenings. Why Fianna Fáil would have wanted him in those circumstances is a bit beyond me, because Micheál Martin is there a lifetime. But that's the way these things go. Yates is just a high-profile figure. He's highly controversial, and he seeks the headlines, and he makes some very irreverent statements. But, I mean, he comes with a huge legacy behind him, having been a government minister for Fine Gael in 97, from 94 to 97. Chain of bookmakers, Celtic bookmakers, that went bust eventually, and he went into bankruptcy, and he bounced back. He's a huge big name. Matt Cooper and himself have had that Path to Power podcast, hugely popular, although I never listened to it. And he would have been on News Talk most of the time. He was on those three mornings before the presidential on the day of it and the day after it. Of course, we didn't hear that because we were with you on that occasion. I would rarely hear him because he's on in the morning at the same time that Highland Radio seems to have a certain programme on, and we can't avoid that. But like at the end of the day, Commission the Man will have to look at this very, very closely. The question is asked there, does it compromise anybody? We'll have to wait to see what Commission the Man says.
But does it matter really? Because Ivan Yates, I wouldn't have saw him as independent. And I don't mean that as a criticism. He's a controversial character. He's an antagonist. I mean, does anyone really listen to him thinking that he's truly being independent? You know, I mean, I can think of other characters that I would say, oh, right, well, that's a bit sus. But, or maybe there is a responsibility for RTE or News Talk to say, look, you know, do you have any genuine skin in this game? Are you getting paid by any particular party, etc.? I don't know. I haven't figured it out in my own head yet.
You see, the issue on behind all of that would be confidentiality insofar as Ivan Yates' clients were concerned. You don't go around saying, well, I won't be on tomorrow morning. I have an appointment with Micheál Martin or whoever it is, let it be any of the senior ministers, let it be any other party, but it seems to have been Fianna Fáil only. And this is a man whose DNA is steeped in Fine Gael from Enniscorthy in County Wexford, a very sharp-witted pundit, very humorous, and he had that gravitas that you either took him seriously or you didn't matter one way or the other. But he had this natural flair and ability to make the type of comment that he made about smearing Catherine Connolly, which was very, very nasty and not nice at all. You don't do those kind of things as a pundit, but Ivan Yates, I suppose, is not depending on his television work. He's the, I think he's probably the most sought-after motivational speaker for after-dinner events and all of this kind of stuff right around the whole country. So he is a huge figure, huge lifetime of experience, and he has very forthright views ever since he was on News Talk with Vincent Brown.
Yeah, and I mean, Mary Hart, I suppose, like, I'm small fry in relation to this, but let's just say hypothetically Charlie McConnellogue was running for president and they asked me to sort of, you know, give him some guidance, and then I came on here and never let on. I suppose if you were to look at it like that, and as I say, you know, I'm small fry, it's not something I would do, and it would, I think, sort of compromise maybe me to some extent. So I suppose we can't disregard it out of hand that this is just Ivan Yates, this is the way he is. And, you know, what's your feeling, though, I suppose, leaning to on your journalistic background?
I mean, I think the original question that we were asked to address was, is it a storm in a teacup, or does it merit more investigation? I think it's a very, very small bubble or ripple in a teacup. I think it's a load of nonsense. I'm not surprised that Ivan Yates, you know, who asked who? Did Ivan Yates go to Fianna Fáil and say, look, I'll do some work for you, this is what I'll charge you? Nobody has asked how much money he got for it. At least I haven't heard the figure mentioned. I'm surprised that Fianna Fáil would be bothered with him. I really just think he's just a, you know, he's a loudmouth. He was never successful, really, at anything he did. He got elected. He became a minister, but he wasn't a great minister. He ended up a failed businessman, went bankrupt, ended up in Wales, went to News Talk. In fact, my brother was his producer in News Talk. I know him from way back, not from recent years, and I wouldn't really have much time for him. I wouldn't be going looking
really
for him.
Really? I never got that impression.
I wouldn't really be coming looking for the likes of Ivan Yates to tell me how I should run campaign.
But you see,
I would look for you now, Greg, maybe.
But Mary, that's really actually got to the core of the way I've been thinking about it, because I don't really care, to be honest with you, and I don't trust anything at this stage, so I'm always thinking critically. But it would make me question Fianna Fáil, to be honest with you, that Micheál Martin sought his guidance ahead of the general election, that all of the so many ministers that they went to him for their training, and also to the fact that they thought he was the guy that would sort of give Jim Gavin an advantage. That, to me, that's the story here, is that who's making those calls within that party?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, did Micheál Martin go seeking him out, or did he come seeking out Fianna Fáil and say, look, I can do this for you. I'm a great after dinner speaker, as John said. You know, like he tries to be controversial, and he was controversial during the campaign. And as John has just said, in a very nasty, nasty way. And again, the assumption being that it was Fine Gael that he was advising, or at least he had his, you know, his foot in that door. And nobody would have suspected it was Fianna Fáil, because I don't think anybody would have thought, well, Fianna Fáil can't really be that silly to take him on. I mean, there are lots and lots and lots of those high profile, like the former presidential one of the candidates before was a speaker or an advisor to the political parties, all of the political parties. So, you know, it's Gavin Duffy, sorry, I should have mentioned his name. Gavin, in fact, trained me as a radio journalist way back in the mid-80s. So, you know, he's somebody who I would not be surprised if he was in there advising either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. And in fact, I think he advised both parties. But I think that the issue here really is it's a journalistic story, you know. It's not I don't think the public could give a toss about who advises.
Because Ivan Yates, I know for a fact, and maybe you've got ins to find this out, but I believe I know for a fact, like, he would have known when he was on News Talk that his show didn't have necessarily massive traction in the Northwest, and controversy creates cash. And he had this little thing where he would sort of, you know, say, we're up here, we're a whole load of moaners, and we're this, that, and then. It wasn't meant with any malice, but it was meant to drive controversy, maybe to get some headlines up here, to get ears onto his show. Like, he does know what he's doing. And I know he has no problems with Donegal, but he had no problem in trying to agitate things to just, as I say, maybe get an extra 2-3% listenership.
Yeah, he's an agitator, and I suppose maybe John would be in the, I'm not so much sure about Mary, but John and myself might say, well, sure, there's not a big difference between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil now, so there's no, you know, that Ivan Yates should be advising Fianna Fáil ministers and their campaign for election. You know, they're all kind of the same bedfellows at the minute. I'm just surprised that anybody would be bothered having Ivan Yates advise them on how to run an election campaign when he wasn't successful himself. You know, he was never really successful at anything he did. He's a successful chatterbox.
Okay.
Controversial person. And he's probably, if he's listening to this, you know, I'll take him on. I'm quite happy to do that.
All right. Okay. That could be another segment. Mary Coyle, has this story caught your attention at all? Or is it something you're very interested in or what?
Well, do you know what? I think it questions the integrity of Ivan Yates. And I'm one of the ones that Mary said there, I couldn't really give a toss and I wouldn't go around the house to see him. I just think on the wider picture, I think they made a mess of the whole thing. I think the presidency of Ireland is something that really represents dignity and unity and moral authority. And I think it just turned into a political brawl. I really think only for I value my vote so much. They really did take the goodness out of it. And I've been reading up about Ivan Yates. And really, to be honest, I don't know why anybody would give him a job. He's got a really checkered past. And why anybody would be bothered listening to him. And again, as Mary said, I am so surprised that Fianna Fáil would even look at him. And for him to, you know, to say that about Catherine Connolly and that attack that he had on Catherine Connolly, that doesn't say much about that man.
But if that's his free advice, what's his paid advice? That's what I'd be interested
absolutely,
in.
Absolutely.
Because I think at the start of that that Virgin Media interview, not rake over old ground, but as soon as I think it was Catherine Connolly opened her mouth, Jim Gavin jumped in to try, and he jumped in at the wrong time. He actually jumped in on the wrong point. And I was just thinking retrospectively, was Ivan saying there, now as soon as she opens her mouth, you get in there and you get your point across. And I'm thinking, you paid for that advice?
Yeah, and that's it, you know. And I think, you know, for anybody to hire this man to prepare anybody for a presidential election, I would question that from the beginning. Mm. I think, you know, it is a bit of a storm in a teacup, but it really looks at the big picture that they made a complete mess of this whole presidential election.
All right, just one other thing, and anyone can jump in on this and then we'll move on. Just in relation to the communications department in Fianna Fáil, because theirs is the story at the moment. They've got a whole load of former journalists and what have you. With the Jim Gavin rent controversy, they were contacted by the Irish Independent. They said, nothing to see here. We don't comment on this. Nothing to see here. Move along. And then it came out as a far bigger scandal. Then with the Ivan Yates story as well, Fionnán Sheehan approached them about that a couple of weeks later and said the same thing. We know this. We know that. What's the story? Their attitude was move along. There's nothing to see here. Blah, 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 blah. And eventually then it did have to come out again. So I suppose, Mary, I'll ask you, like, What is the Fianna Fáil or perhaps other big parties' communications departments actually doing? They're paying millions, a lot to former journalists and what have you, and the most basic stuff, they've blown things way bigger than they need to be.
Yeah, I mean, as I have to hold my hand up because I did work in my early journalist days. I did work with the Fine Gael Press Office, and I was one of those. I wasn't a top advisor; I was only a little minion. But in those days, and that I'm talking those days in the early 80s, there wasn't the big money floating about to pay consultants and advisors and PR companies and media companies and how you do this and how you do that. It's become a whole business. So begs the question, why do you have your own press office if you have to buy in all of these other companies and pay them a fortune? I don't know who the head of the Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or Labour or anybody's
No, neither do I. Mm.
And, you know, should we know that? And, you know, as I said, Gavin Duffy, I can tell you, is an excellent motivator because I was behind, you know, he's the person that pushed me into a microphone when I said, no, this is like getting a tooth pulled. he was very good, a very good motivational speaker, very erudite, very funny, very talented. But, you know, that's some people are very good, but he was making money by dint of doing that. I really don't see why political parties have to buy in spin doctors when they should be employing their own.
Maybe it tells its own story.
The government is spending a fortune employing spin doctors, Mary, and they have been ever since Leo Varadkar became the Taoiseach back all those years ago. And we saw how successful he was, you know. The art of a spin doctor is to make you believe that black is white. And they begin at 7 o'clock in the morning and they finish at 11 o'clock at night. And that goes on day in and day out. This whole thing is still a fallout from the Jim Gavin controversy and the mess that Fianna Fáil made of the entire presidential campaign. And given that there's a report due out on about next Wednesday, it's time to fasten our seatbelts for the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party to see how much of it they believe and how much of it they don't. But this is something that's probably all about fairness. Sinn Féin will have a gripe with Ivan Yates in that he predicted that they're going to win 70 seats in the last general election. I mean, nobody in their maddest dreams would have dreamt up that one. I mean, if they got 37 or 40, it would have been the very height of it. But it was those kind of clips that gave him the kind of mantra of publicity. He was a million miles wrong. And I suppose it's all about fairness and broadcasting and impartiality and how it affects the broadcasters. And if they're commercially involved in the campaign, but do not declare that they had any input into that particular party, I think Common the Man will have to look at this in a much clearer way and come up with some clearer direction for the future, because you can't tie people's hands behind the back on these things either.
Yeah.
But like at the end of the day.
But that being said, he could have gone into any of those national interviews just before we move on. And the presenter could have said, we're joined now by political correspondent Ivan Yates, and we're just to say, in the interest of fairness, he has been doing some consultancy work with Fianna Fáil. Ivan would have said, oh yes, but I can still maintain my impartiality, blah, 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 blah. And it would have, he could still have contributed, it's just everybody's cards.
It just seems to be just as simple as that there, that declaration wasn't made. I don't imagine that any of the three of us on here this morning have any commercial interest anywhere else outside of Highland Radio, apart from me running the Tribune.
Well, yeah, I know, but I think you have a lot of influence, John. I just think you haven't started invoicing yet. That's your problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is, you know, the invoicing. I think I'd love to know how much did I even get paid to do what he did. Was he any good? Did he obviously wasn't. The whole Fianna Fáil campaign alone was a disaster. From almost words, the word go. So you wonder where was he in all of that muddle?
Did they keep the receipt in case they want a refund? Okay, thanks very much. The voice of Mary Hart. We've got also Mary Cole and John McAteer. More from them and you after the break. We've been inundated with calls this week from angry motorists frustrated by, in Letterkenny, active travel roadworks, which have caused significant traffic delays, people late for work, school, hospital appointments. The current works are basically outside the hospital in Letterkenny to provide cycle and walking lanes, with the road being narrowed as well. And this is just part of a wider active travel project that we don't really know fully the impact in terms of traffic movement there will be when all these works are finished. So it's about timing here, but I want to broaden it out as well, because it's not just in Letterkenny, but we'll focus on that a little bit because of the commercial impacts and what have you. But you will notice over the years, towards the end of the year, you see a plethora of road improvements and around Buncrana, the Twin Towns, wherever it might be. It's where funds are available, funds need to be spent, and people go, well, why are we doing it this time of year when the days are short and it's wet and we're trying to get people from school and back from school and all that type of stuff? So there's two things going on here. I suppose there's the the late in the year maintenance work that people can get frustrated about, but also to these works in the mouth of Christmas in Letterkenny, which are having a particular impact. Though I do note a number of schools in Letterkenny are off today and the traffic was moving relatively freely. I'll go to John first on this purely because he was writing about this in the paper this week. John, I just can't get any sense of public support for the active travel plans in and around Letterkenny at all, but certainly to the timing and nature of the works too. The public don't seem to be happy at all.
I've been caught up on this a couple of times this week, you know, taking an hour from Williston to get into the centre of Letterkenny. Just dread the thought of Christmas approaching for the business people of Letterkenny, because it's that month that they need to make an awful lot of money to stay afloat throughout the spring into Easter and beyond. I don't understand it. I mean, driving down past the hospital there's a huge amount of work going on there. Traffic is just down to a crawl, and you could be sitting there long and into the morning and missing appointments and all that, as you can see. It's probably outside of the jurisdiction of Donegal County Council. It's an EU project. And I think it was Eamon Ryan that brought these policies back from Europe and got that funding. There's 80% funding for these jobs.
It was the council and the councillors that actually voted for these active travel plans too.
So yeah, like it's part of the remit. We have the same about to happen in Remelton, which is completely log jammed with traffic over the Shore Road every day. That's about to get worse because there's a footpath of 2.4 metres going in on one side of that road and a 1.5 metre footpath on the other side. And then after that, as if to make sure that things are going to be all right for the next millennium, there's a big 5-foot wall going in there, a flooding relief thing. It'll be like a bit, somebody says it'll be a bit like driving towards Alcatraz, because you're not going to see anything but concrete as you drive across the Shore Road. But the active travel thing is going to create chaos. The whole issue there, Greg, is that they're hell-bent on taking motorists off the road entirely, you know. So how do we get into Letterkenny? And this goes back to the commercial realm, that there's so many businesses in there. And they're all contributing very heavily in rates and taxes and everything else and employing people. And this is sort of anti the business community.
Why are the businesses so quiet about it then? Are they afraid that if they join this conversation very vocally that they could actually end up discouraging the public from coming in and spending money with them, if you know what I mean? I'm very, very conscious and aware of that, and I don't want to do anything to disadvantage any businesses. But at the same time, we can't ignore what listeners are saying to us either. But are businesses finding it as tight as you one might presume?
I think they are. I think there's no two ways about that. Trying to get into Letterkenny is such a nightmare that driving in from Remelton, you can be delayed just out beyond the Silver Tassie. That's a long way out of Letterkenny. And if you're rushing to an appointment or rushing to meet somebody, you're not going to make it. And what is happening is that people are just opting not to go into Letterkenny. And that's the worst thing that can be said. I'm sure the Chamber is watching this with great anxiety and great fear and great worry, because this is going to go on ad infinitum, because active travel is going to be brought into every town and village across the whole country in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. And we're all going to have to suck it and just get on with it. But, you know, to start that work at this time of the year is absolutely ridiculous, and it shows no empathy or support at all for the business community.
And also, too, the narrowing of roads, the removal of turning lanes. We actually don't really know if this is just a sample of what it will be like once these works are completed, because you are choking the traffic. It's unavoidable. There are other measures like narrowing outside Mount Argyll to two lanes and other stuff up Glencar, etc. Mary Coyle, I presume you're not impacted by this on the daily, but it might influence you whether you're, you know, coming into Letterkenny or having to travel through Letterkenny or whatever the situation. So what's your view?
Well, Greg, it's not just Letterkenny. As you're aware, we do a lot of work providing transport for patients that are attending hospitals. And that came to light yesterday when we were trying to get a patient from the Fallcarra area to Sligo via Letterkenny. And it really... first and foremost, in Fallcarra, there was a road closed, which left it very hard to pick that patient up. But you're going through Letterkenny then, and you really have to add another hour and a half on to your journey before you even leave there. Now, there's a couple of things here that I would think there has to be bad planning somewhere, because, okay, there's extra money at Christmas and you can see, you know, that it's good to see some infrastructure being carried out and it's good to see all that. But for me to want to go to Letterkenny to shop, I don't like it. You know, I don't like all the traffic. I don't like the way it's laid out and you're caught in traffic no matter where. You're actually better off parking your car somewhere and walking around Letterkenny if it's a good enough day. But I think I would fear for them coming up to Christmas and everybody wants to shop, but you hear everybody saying, oh my God, the traffic in Letterkenny is so bad. It's so hard, you know, to get around that. Even if the local link service was working a bit better around Letterkenny and that it was, you know, that the timing of that was advertised so as that you could leave your car on the outskirts of Letterkenny and make your way in there. There has to be a wee bit more forward planning.
Mary, even if these lanes were actually bus lanes, and cyclists shared the bus lanes. I think you see that in other parts of the world, what have you. But they're narrowing the roads and there's no accommodation for, as far as I could see, hopping on and off a bus. The bus has to stop in the middle of the road. If you're turning right in certain parts now, if you can turn right, there's no right turning lane. You're stopped in the middle of the road. And this is all to accommodate a cycle lane. And unless you are a Tour de France cyclist, I cannot see you manually pedalling up this road from the hospital roundabout up to here, say I'm at the mountaintop.
No. And there are people that are interested in cycling, you know, but there's other people and they're never going to use the cycle line. There's always going to be more people using the cars and the buses. So they are a priority as well. But I think, you know, there's something else that I feel that should be mentioned as well, and that is people have less patience now. Mm. I don't know what it is. They have
It's constantly being tested. That's the problem.
And you can be sitting there, you know, in your car, and there are people. I always try to abide by if there is someone coming out of a side road. If everybody lets one person off the traffic away before them, the traffic will flow a lot easier. But there are some people so tied up to the next bumper that they're never going to let anybody
But I get out. Where you're coming from, Mary, and I would be that type. I will always let a car out. But if you look at the roundabout just below us here, for an example, which you would be coming in from the west of the county as well, you effectively have one, two, three, four lanes of traffic going into a single lane. So it doesn't lend itself or allow for patience, because you're trying to put a massive square block into a round hole.
Well, you are. I do understand that. And I suppose the fact that I'm not sitting there every day is easier.
That's why you look so young.
I'm young. I wish, Greg.
All right, okay.
Come 11 Gidor. It's lovely. There's no traffic.
I know. Mary Hart, I mean, are we living in the moment? Omelets, eggs, you know, do we need to be looking at the future? Are we being too of the now?
Well, I mean, Eamon Ryan has a lot to answer for. That's what I would say. First and foremost, taking away our lovely fireplaces, and that's going to have to change, leaving people frozen because there's no fireplace in the house. The roads, all you do is take a look at that dual carriageway, so called, into Letterkenny. How long it took them to do the roadworks there, to put a cycle lane on either side of the footpath. Got the footpath, I think the height of the footpath wrong, and they had to start all over again. They have no escape lane. They have nowhere for the ambulance to go. I've heard recently, whether it's true or not, that they have to take that island in the middle away.
They're not doing that. What they're doing, and it's actually even worse, you might say, after spending 10 million on that road plus, they're actually lowering the curve so cars can drive in on top of the cycle lane or footpath to let emergency vehicles through.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and, you know, I do know that height of that particular footpath, cycle path, had a problem because it was the wrong heights, and that's why they had to go and start keep going, why it possibly took so long. I am one of those people that I don't work anymore, so I don't have to get to work in Letterkenny. If I would dread.
But, yes, but no, you know, this is perfect. You're loaded, right? We want some of that juicy, juicy retirement money, right?
Well, I'm retired because I've worked hard all my life.
That's my point. You're more valuable now. We want you in Letterkenny buying handbags and shopping. So if you're at the point now where you're going, well, you know, I don't have to go in there. This is exactly, you're the perfect example, Mary.
Yeah, but, you know, we have a lovely little town in Raphoe and I do most of my shopping.
No, I know.
There.
You know what I mean, though.
But absolutely, look, I hate having to face the traffic in Letterkenny, and you cannot judge it. Is it going to be at 3 o'clock? Is it going to be at 2 o'clock? Is it going to be at 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock? There's no way of knowing when you're going to hit a traffic jam. And I don't ride a bike. I never could ride a bike. It's not that I don't like riding bikes. I just can't. I've just got an issue with it. Therefore, they're not my favourite people. And I'm driving off somewhere and there's
it's okay. You won't see any.
On the narrow road.
But Mary, you're okay. You won't see any around Letterkenny. You'll see more up around Raphoe. Yes. Don't worry about it. I went round Google Maps the entire Letterkenny and I saw one person on a cyclist, on a bike.
Yes, I was going to say that. I have yet to see one cyclist on that dual carriageway in Letterkenny going one way or the other. I have not seen anyone. Rolling back to Eamon Ryan and his Green Ireland, and he has caused an awful lot of issues. All of these cycle lanes are wonderful in parts of Europe where they don't have the same road networks that we have. And it's a complete and utter disaster at the minute. It's an utter disaster for Letterkenny. And there has to be a team of architects, engineers, road planners there pulling their hair out, but somebody's accountable. Somebody is accountable for causing this. They say, no, we're not doing this because it's going to cause a really serious problem for the people living in Donegal, alone the visitors.
Well, John McAteer, let me put it to you then this. The people that could have stopped this were county councillors, right? They had a vote on this, whether or not to proceed with this plan. It was a county-wide vote, so all of the counties, all the councillors around the county had an option. And, you know, the Milford Letterkenny councillors voted a certain way. And then people who are in Mallon, Gwyddor, wherever they are, all voted sort of along party lines. They don't have to live with this, right? Should that vote not have been concentrated on those that represent the people and the people's views and say, right, okay, we understand that we might lose this few million, but let's get the 10T done and then we'll try and source this kind of active travel money again, because it's not that big amount of money that we can't source it into the future. And ultimately that does come to the doorstep of the elected representatives.
The 10T is going to bring a huge relief around Letterkenny. It's going to cause a lot of havoc during its construction phase. But that aside, you know, the councillors, whichever way they voted, the money was allocated. I mean, the councillors have a say to that point. But it's going to go ahead regardless of what they say, because the money's 80% of it is allocated from Europe, and Donegal County Council is saddled with 20% of it. The whole thing it's so anti-business, it's so anti-motorist, but that is the purpose of it. Active travel is about leaving your car and your motorbike and whatever else you might be driving at home and walking there. And I mean, this is just simply not on. It's not going to happen. Councillor, I mean, what can they say or do about it? Donal Mandakelly has been very
We were told that use it or lose it. So I was given the impression that the councillors, if they didn't accept these proposals, now I do understand the difference between sort of executive decisions and not, but it was being sold to us that if we don't use this money, we lose this money. So the councillors must have had some say on whether or not these works went ahead or not, or else we were misled in the importance of that vote then, one or the other.
You can see clearly where the councillors stand on this. They want what's best for Letterkenny. Every last councillor going into the chamber in Lufford, and there's 37 of them, some of them might never use it, but the fact is that they go to Letterkenny several times a year. But they really don't. The executive functions are in Europe, not in Donegal County Council, not with the Minister for the Environment or Planning. It's just genuinely that green agenda, and it's for taking all vehicles off all roads, and that's never going to work, because whilst we all support stopping the planet from overheating, those actions are doing nothing but adding to it. Can you imagine the amount of fumes are being generated while you're sitting in traffic?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't add up to any realistic common sense.
But Mary Coyle, the thing is, though, right, and Mary Hart alluded to this, who are they being built for? Who are the cyclists? I don't see cyclists. All I see is people on scooters on the footpaths. So they're not supposed to be on the footpaths. They're supposed to be on the roads. So we can't, whatever traffic there is at the moment, it's a free-for-all. But who are the cyclists? Who's the cyclist that is going to cycle down from the mountaintop, pick up a nice jacket in a shop, and cycle that bike up that massive lane up here? Because that's what active travel is, isn't it? Who are these people? For whom are these lanes being built for? I don't believe these people exist.
I don't know. I have family that live in Letterkenny, and yes, they do have bicycles, but I don't think they cycle into Letterkenny. I think at this point it's too dangerous to be cycling in Letterkenny. And if you're cycling and the traffic is that heavy, you're taking in all the fumes as you're cycling along. So that's not very healthy where there's built up traffic. I mean, if you, where we live here in Gweedore, there are so many cyclists and they're out all the time and you can see them. But I have to agree, when I go to Letterkenny, you don't really see cyclists. You see people walking or running, but you don't see cyclists. So I don't really know how they came up with this. And what did they do? Did they do some kind of survey to find out that this was actually needed? Or did they talk to the people to find out, is this what the people want? Or should there be better roads for the cars and the buses? You know, I think myself, if you're talking about somebody going in on a bicycle and you're talking about the local link going in, the local link can take 40 to 50 people, whereas a cyclist is only one. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there was enough thought put into this. I don't think maybe that they got enough views from the community. But it's sometimes...
Well, they got plenty of views from the community. It's just that we disregard.
But probably not what they're doing with it.
Okay.
But I always think, Greg, that there are always people making plans for areas that don't live in those areas and don't realise the problems that they have in those areas.
Mm. That's a critical point. I think so. Thank you for that. Now, a caller says, by the way, on the Lifford to St Johnston Road, a mile from St Johnston on the Lifford side, a car has gone into the ditch, taking out a pole, and there are wires down. Now, we don't know the extent of any injuries. We don't believe them to be serious, but there is serious congestion in the area. So if you are out on the roads, keep an eye on that. Last topic with our panel here, who are Mary Hart, journalist and broadcaster, John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper, and Mary Cole, manager of Inadneath Padraig. Should character references be allowed in sexual assault cases and other serious criminal trials? There is some legislation that's being introduced in this area, but they are part of the legal system, and you will hear from time to time, either locally or nationally, people objecting to these character references. Mary, I'll start with you, Mary Coyle, if that's all right. I suppose it's very easy to sort of say, of course they shouldn't, right? But maybe they do form an important part of the decision-making process. Do you have a particular view?
I think maybe there's a limited place for character references, and it really depends on the offence. You know, if it's a minor offence and it's something out of character for somebody, there is, I think, a limited place for this. And I think, you know, each case, it would have to be looked at case by case, you know, because then, you know, I don't think that for a severe case, it could be a bit problematic. You know, it depends. I think, really, Greg, it depends on the offence, you know. But in our society, I think sometimes, you know, everybody is still innocent until proven guilty. And I really think it's on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, I think often these are introduced too, though, at sentencing. And I presume the idea is to give the court a wider picture of the defendant, Can they be rehabilitated? Is there a potential there? Is this typical behaviour of them? You know, what is the broader standing in the community? I mean, is this, if we believe the judicial system is about people paying for a crime and ultimately being rehabilitated, as galling as it might be in some of the serious cases we talk of, is it not the better option for a judge to have a more complete picture?
But I think it is, you know, like, if I really feel if there's something really out of character for somebody and they do something, you know, that is completely, you know, not in their nature, then it's good to build, you know, to have those kind of character references,
Mary, from
to see
that,
what their life was like beforehand.
If I were listening to your comments, I would conclude that the only way that can be achieved is that we continue to allow them, but trust the judges to either disregard or use them depending on the defendant and the nature of the crime then. Because how can it be fair if we sort of say, well, you did that and you can't have one, but you did that and you can have one?
Yeah.
You know, it's a complicated area.
A lot would have to be down to the evidence that they're presented with as well. I think, you know, there has to be places for people who there's minor crimes out there, and there has to be places where rehabilitation has to take place. And, you know, it is a tricky one.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a tricky one. And even, you know, we are asked every now and again for character references. And if I don't know the person, I won't give it. Because, you know, you have to be sure that you know this person, and you have to know. So it's something that a lot of people are not comfortable with now either.
Okay. Mary Hart, what's your view on this?
I agree with all that Mary is saying. I mean, every case is different. You know, even from murder, you know, there are circumstances, you know, if a wife is being beaten half to death every day of the week, and then she suddenly turns around and uses a shovel, you know, and kills her husband. You know, that's different from somebody walking in the door and shooting somebody. So there, you know, every case is different. And I know the new law will be, I think it's just that there has to be an affidavit signed to say what your character reference is, the truth. That you're, you know, and you would have hoped that every character reference is the truth. You know, thankfully, we're past the days when politicians would write a character reference for people they didn't know, and it would come up in court, and then it would turn out that this politician didn't know the person, and they wrote the character reference. That is gone, and hopefully, that will never come back. It's certainly, as Mary said, you know, everybody deserves a fair trial. There are mitigating circumstances in many cases. There are aggravating circumstances in many cases. The judge is, at the end of the day, the judge is really the person who will guide the sentencing. He can't guide it beyond if it's a murder. It doesn't matter what kind of character reference you get, you are going to have a life sentence. And a life sentence is a life sentence. You know, you are forever sentenced to life, and if you get out early, well, that's because you're good behavior. But
you're
back in jail.
I'm more concerned about the discretionary power of judges, to be honest with you, whereby someone guilty of a financial crime, as abhorrent as it might be, bang them up. Someone who's got child abuse images, you only add 2,500 and you're generally a nice guy, away you go. You know, and that's more of a concern for me than character references.
You know, there are, you can appeal a severe sentence, and you can also appeal a lenient sentence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so that is there for for the person. So, I mean, a judge will do what he believes to be a fair, will give a fair, what he believes to be a fair sentence. He'll take everything into consideration, and he'll weigh up, and I mean, it's proportionality.
Understood.
That's really what it is.
All right,
you know?
Last word to John McAteer. We've got a minute and a half.
Like, in fairness, the question that was posed to us is character references in sexual assault cases, mm-hmm. and that's quite fairly specific, and I'm going to stick with that one because I've been asked on a couple of occasions to write a reference as a newspaper editor, and I would not do that. But this has seemed to be a balancing act about the rights of the accused and with the protection of the victim. So that's a very finely balanced area. Nowadays, there's a bit of more protection because whoever sends the character reference or affidavit is subject to appearing in court and being quizzed by the legal teams. That is a new piece of legislation that has just come in there. And we'll have to wait a while and see is this actually working, because there's a particular resonance about character references in sexual assault cases, because the victim, in generally speaking, has been abused and is very traumatised, and we need to do by what is best for them alone.
All right, listen, thank you so much. John McAteer, lovely to have you on the programme as always. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care. Brilliant stuff. Mary Hart, lovely to see you again. We'll chat again very soon.
Yes.
Look all after right. yourself. And last but certainly not least is our friend who's the manager of Inidney Podrick, Mary Cole. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Lovely
Bye-bye.
Stuff. Keep up the amazing work that you guys are doing, you personally and the rest of you are doing there. Thanks so much. Back after the news with your legal questions with Seamus Gunn.